Welcome to episode 123 of Red Board Rewind. My name is Spencer Lugmule, and today my special guest is none other than In the Money's very End of Daily Galv's very own Andrew Rozinski. Me and Andrew go over one of our more favorite tracks at this time of year, that being Tampa Bay Downs. We cover three races from Saturday's card, those races being 2, 7, and 10. And some angles that we come up with are how some B-tier tracks like Indiana Grand's form coming over to Tampa Bay Downs at the beginning of the meet is proving positive EV. And also how you have a trainer with good back class on a horse can definitely find the winner's circle. This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's Red Board Rewind. He is a common person you will see talking Parks Racing for In the Money. He is also part of our Slack pack. It is Andrew Rozinski. Andrew, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Just got off work. We're doing a late night stream this week, but you know, we're getting the job done and we're ready to, you know, go over some races.
I'll say that's my fault trying to message you yesterday and you're like, "Well, I'm working all day." I'm like, "Can you go, can I do it at midnight?" I go, "Of course we can do it at midnight. Anything to get the pot on the road. We're trying to get it out earlier every Tuesday. So if we can't get it done Monday mornings, I'm open to whatever. Usually I'm off every Monday. So good to have you on. How is your year been? I know I haven't had you on in a little bit. How was your Breeders' Cup, et cetera?
Breeders' Cup wasn't the best of days for me handicapping. I did have some good winners. I had, you know, I was cheering on Japan and all that stuff because I do watch a lot of international racing late at night. So it was good to see them get their two wins. Other than that, just, you know, doing my daily park stuff and, you know, going up to the races every time they run. Well, not every time, but as much as I can. Got a new job, you know, doing good. Yeah, betting sports, betting Tampa, betting parks, you know, not betting as much as I would be on horses as I used to be, but, you know, trying to pick my spots a little bit better, be a little bit more disciplined this year.
Obviously for In the Money, you're known as the Parks guy, but me and you both know as do I, as most of us in the Slack pack, do we have a love affliction with Tampa Bay? What kind of leads you down to that track? I know it's not one of the, you know, bottom tier track. It's more of a mid tier track, but I kind of have a love for it as well. Where do you kind of get that for that type of track in the winter?
It really, like, I mean, I've always had a fascination with Tampa, just because I feel like it's like the Florida version of like parks or something up in the Mid Atlantic. As you know, most trainers and owners, even, you know, they ship during the summer up to the Mid Atlantic from Tampa when Tampa shuts down, like Bennett and the Bennetts and, you know, Delgados and all that stuff. But during the pandemic, like the beginning of it, we just started up the Slack pack and we were looking for races to bet on, and the only tracks were Tampa, Gulfstream, Will Rogers, and we all just kind of gravitated to Tampa Bay. And then I hit that cold pick five back in April of 2020, and I just been hooked since, trying to, you know, duplicate those tickets.
I think with this track too, it's very interesting. A lot of, you know, certain tracks we talk about, you know, top heavy riders, where, you know, the Ortiz brothers, Flavian Pratt out west, a couple guys in the middle of the country as well. And I think with, you know, we obviously have Sammy Camacho, but I think we have also guys like Centeno and Gallardo. And for how up and down of a jockey group it is, usually Camacho wins. But the last couple of years, it's been kind of, you know, closer. And I just like it when, you know, there's three or four guys, right, at 15 to 20% compared to, you know, just having one guy at 25+.
Yeah, I agree. And this year, the jockey colony down there is probably the deepest and toughest it's been in the last 10 years, with Jose Ferrer and, you know, all the normal guys coming down, but also jockeys like Fernando de la Cruz and Isaac Castillo and, you know, CJ Hernandez, Rocco Bowen's riding here. There's, you know, Jermaine Bridgmahan. There's just jockeys from Delaware, from the Midwest. It kind of just all gravitated to Tampa. And I guess maybe that's sunny weather, or maybe they thought they could take advantage of a weaker jockey colony. But, you know, it's pretty tough, and it's been living up to it so far.
I know for you, being, you know, more of the Mid-Atlantic guy, it's always nice to kind of have them follow around, being able to follow the right connections. Anybody that we should be on the lookout for that maybe might, you know, maybe they're going to be that 9-10% guy, but you know they're going to be bringing in those winners of, you know, $15-$20.
This year down there, there is actually kind of, I wouldn't say inflated with more top tier trainers, but the like the Victor Barbosas and the Michael Deanies and all those guys that are usually down in Florida and then they come up to the Mid-Atlantic during the summer, they just been consistently good all year round. So like, I'm not going to be too surprised if they finish, you know, above 10%. But there is a lot of small time trainers this year that I'm actually looking forward to. Like, I think Douglas Nunn could be a good 10% trainer this year. You know, there's a couple other people. There's just it's a lot of small barns, and then there's also a lot of top heavy, you know, top tier barns that are going to be down there. Like, you know, you got Juana Villa that's going to be down there. You know, all the, a lot of trainers that you wouldn't expect to be down there, you know, typically, or not with a full stable at least. And this year it seems that there, a lot of people just took a shot with Tampa.
We're kind of, you know, for me, everyone sees that 10%, 8%, 13%, and they just kind of, you know, make a judgment call on how good someone can be. But someone can be 10% and their ROI could be much better than, you know, the Chad Browns of the world, you know, the Bennett's of the world. And, you know, it's always good to try, you know, make sure you're keeping track of these trainers and connections, especially jockeys too. When certain barns are using certain jocks, they'll usually kind of stay together if they're getting hot. And definitely something for Tampa that I always look forward to.
Oh yeah, I agree 100%.
For the rest of this year, obviously we're just about to be into December. What are you kind of looking for from the horse racing perspective? Are you looking to just kind of focus, you know, just on, you know, where you are for the year? Are you kind of looking forward to next year already with the Derby Trail, et cetera? What are you kind of looking to do for the next, you know, 3-4 weeks before we turn to the new year?
I kind of just want to stay active in the handicapping scene. You know, like I usually take a step back post Breeders' Cup and not, you know, attack as much on certain bets and play as often. But I think I'm just going to stick with, you know, doing my parks and Tampa and all that stuff when they run. And I am looking forward to the Turfway meet that starts up on, I believe, Thursday this week. So, yeah, I like the winter. I like, you know, those smaller tracks that have those low-level races, and that's where I really excel at. So I kind of just focus on that during the winter.
Let's jump into the first race of this pod. We're going to get 3 races. The first being race number 2 from Tampa Bay Downs on Saturday. It was a 5,000. Non-winners have won 4 a year. They haven't won a race since May 27th. 6 furlongs on the dirt. I kind of had a favorite I was interested in and a long shot. Where did you go in this race, Andrew?
Yeah, I kind of went with the top two choices were the 2 and the 5, I believe, or the 2 and the 3. But I went 2-5 as my top two, and then I had one long shot underneath, which was the 6. The 2, I really thought was going to just, you know, really just smoke this field, in my opinion. The bullet workouts coming from Gulfstream, you know, no experience at Tampa, but had that type of run style that really dominates Tampa, where they, like, you know, go to the lead or they can press off and they just make their one run. Also liked how it was coming second off the layoff, second off the claim, Barbosa, Camacho. You really couldn't miss with this horse. It didn't, you know, look that way. Turn it for home when we get to that. But, yeah, and I also liked Benny Feliciano's horse with his family member on aboard. You know, usually that's a kind of a jockey trainer combo you want to look at when you watch Tampa and you bet Tampa. But that didn't, I don't think that really worked out too well either. Or not how I hoped. And then, the 6, I thought would have had a chance to maybe do a little bit of a pace play, coming off that layoff and, you know, has good stats at Tampa, but, you know, that didn't work out either. So, you know, who did you like?
I was kind of in the same boat with you. I kick in the 2, Camacho, like we've said, Barbosa. This one had been hanging the board a lot. There are some negatives that I'll transpire here, and then we can talk more about afterwards. But this one hit the board a lot, had 2 wins, but had a couple losses as the favorite, and this time he was going off at, you know, sub even money. And with those, you pretty much have to be 8-9 times out of 10 correct when playing, you know, win bets. I know obviously people are also mixing them in exactas and trifectas and playing pick fours and pick fives. This was just a horse that I was going to use on top, and my underneath use was going to be the number one Indy Ride. I'm a huge Jose Ferrer fan. Maria Bauer stock. I just think, like, when you look back and you look in this horse's PPs, there's only three races this horse was good with, and it was in this barn. And I think sometimes, especially with these, you know, older horses, this one only being four, but when they go from a barn back to a barn where they've had success, even though it's farther down the PPs, I mean, I'm sure you see it all the time, Andrew, when you're talking with friends and they, you know, oh, I don't like that horse. He didn't hit the board the last three times. Well, it's a completely different scenario today.
Yeah, I agree. You know, looking back at it, Indy Ride had a ton of back class in that, you know, Tampa form and all that stuff from the end of the meet last year. And then since then, hasn't really found its footing. But that was at, you know, Mountaineer, Presque Isle, Thistle Downs, you know, smaller tracks that are in the Midwest. You know, this horse could have just been a Tampa form. And, you know, Jose Ferrer's riding lights out. He won like three out of the first five races of the meet, you know, and should have more. So, yeah, I could definitely see why you liked Indy Ride.
I think so, too. And just to also reiterate, if this horse is 2-1, it's a stay away. The fact this horse is double digits is the whole main reason why I was going to use this horse underneath as a helpful play with the favorite iKicken. For me in this race, it's iKicken and Indy Ride. And for Andrew, it's iKicken and mine, your own Malone. Let's see who wins this second race right now.
Race is on. Caught him in a very good line. Rocky's Buckaroo in the yellow colors shows out first, goes right to the early lead. iKicken, the favorite, coming through in between runners to challenge, and down toward the inside, Indy Ride is prominent as well. Those three pretty much across the track. Indy Ride actually had to tap on the brakes there and goes back to third. After that comes Doko to that one's outside. It's two more than the Sunshine, Charlie, and Resident. They race in tandem fifth and sixth, and they're three clear of Mind Your Own Malone, who's at the back. A half mile left to go in their journey. And up on the front end, Rocky's Buckaroo leads it by a neck. iKicken the favorite in a tight spot down toward the inside, trying to come up on level terms now as they run to the 3/8 pole. Those two are two lengths ahead of Indy Ride, who's trying to gear toward the outside from third. Break of 2.5 more then. Sunshine Charlie starts to come alive, is up to the fourth spot. Then we come back to Resident. Doko the first to drop back. Still a long last to Mind Your Own Malone. Rocky's Buckaroo maintaining that short advantage. Indy Ride swings up on the outside. iKicken has to do a little better down toward the inside. They're three lengths clear of Sunshine Charlie. Final furlong time now. It's still Rocky's Buckaroo down on the inside. Here's iKicken coming back through. These two have been going at it for much of the journey. Right down the outside, Indy Ride is starting to level off. Indy Ride hitting best stride late. Here's Indy Ride up on the outside of Rocky's Buckaroo. Indy Ride to win it.
And the number one, Indy Ride, does get it done. 69 is the winning buyer. $31 even is the winning mutual. Pissed I didn't put a win bet on this horse. Just disappointed in general. iKicken runs third. And I mean, even when you look overall, did have that back class, but has losses as favorites and was, you know, 6-8 underneath with only one win at this distance. It's just, it isn't the type of favorite I think that I didn't look deep enough to try to, you know, poke enough holes in.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Looking back at it, this horse might have just needed a little bit shorter or maybe just likes Gulfstream. I don't know. I'm interested to see if this, where this horse ends up next time, especially if it runs at Tampa, because I think the horse did start picking up its feet a little bit late and it kind of was just confused, you know, from what I can remember. But the one interesting thing is the horse that you had underneath as your long shot ran first and the horse I had underneath as my long shot ran second. So we could have had a really good exacta there. So, but, we obviously didn't communicate that day.
With the horse that ran second here, you know, as we see, you know, coming out of that, you know, 50 buyer didn't hit the board, but obviously had now seen improvement after those two terrible races at Monmouth, all of a sudden kind of wakes up. How important is that when you're looking at these lower graded races where all of a sudden you see that kind of wake up in form? You know, how many races can we start to see, you know, that improvement? He came right back, improved again to a 66, which is right around like where the top number is for this one in the form cycles of his past races.
Well, if you look back, towards the end of last year, when this horse was running at the end of the Monmouth meet, it had a third, it claimed an 8-9-4. Then he finally beats the 9-4 condition and then gets sent down to Tampa, kind of how they did it this year. And then it took him a while to get into his rhythm again, come at Tampa, you know, sixth, ninth, fourth, then finally gets a win in the same condition as it was this year back in April. And then they switch it back down to take it back up to Monmouth, and it took three starts for it to even really show a little bit of improvement. So maybe this horse just takes a little bit to come into form, and it looks like after that win, it has to grind back into that form again. So maybe the next time out, this horse might be able to hit the board or even win compared to the former two form cycles of the last, you know, year and a half.
Let's move on to race number 7 from Tampa Bay Downs this past Saturday. Optional 16N1X, 7 furlongs on the dirt. How important is it for you when you look at these 7 furlong races compared to the other, you know, the shorter sprints, 6, and, you know, even stretching out to a mile? Do you have any certain, you know, tweaks or just handicapping angles you use for 7 furlongs? I know a lot of people talk about cutbacks.
Yeah, with 7 furlongs, I'm kind of used to it with parks because they do have, you know, a lot of 7 furlong races, and I can kind of compare the two, you know, like I said earlier, to each other. So I know, like, those 7 furlong one term, you know, distance races tend to, like, favor front runners, in my opinion, especially on dirt. Like, you know, 7 furlong turf races, you can catch, you know, make up some more ground. But I usually just play, especially at Tampa, you know, horses that can sit anywhere from in the top 4, that can sit maybe 2-3 lengths off at most, because on those one turn dirt races at Tampa, you need to be close, you need to be up front, because those fractions are going to be hot and they're going to hold. And it's happened the first opening week, just how we thought it would be. I just stick with the horses that are looking like they're going to be front forwardly placed, and then, you know, hopefully they hold on.
For me in this race, I kind of ended up, again, chalky, Miss Ileana Liana from the outside, Camacho again, one of my favorites. There wasn't much with buyer par stats in here. I just saw this one, you know, obviously dropping out of the allowance races was with the Mike Dini barn, who we just talked about, who was very good. Gets into a weaker barn now. But I just wondered, you know, that 79 couple back, if maybe just in the claiming ranks, this one was just meant to be there. And ended up going off at 5-2, so I actually ended up going up in price. So I wasn't too worried about taking a shot with this one. If this one took a little bit of money, I just didn't really know what else to really play in this race. What about you?
Yeah, the seven was on my top choice too. I had the 2 and the 1 as my second and third choices, thinking that they could be kind of forwardly placed and, you know, maybe make up a trip. And I liked how the 2 was, you know, consistently okay at this level, if not higher levels. And coming from Delaware and tripping down to, you know, Tampa, which has kind of similar surfaces, actually more similar to Delaware, in my opinion, than it is to, like, a Parks or a Laurel or even a Penn National. But I also loved Jose Ferrer hopping on the 1 horse. And I thought that Jose Ferrer breaking from the rail would probably be second, maybe third down the backside. But yeah, I was 7-2-1 here, and I thought the 7 could actually be a single. I didn't think the horse was, you know, going to get beat. Especially with the pace presence that the horse presented. So yeah, it didn't work out, but
I think also with the 2, 3-for-3 in the money at 7 furlongs, and it's so hard to be good at a certain distance. I think that also can kind of add to, you know, you liking the 2 as well, because if any other horse is really going to jump up, this one was right below, you know, those buyer par numbers. I take 5 off. So now it's 65. This one's running those low, you know, almost mid-60 buyers. This is kind of the one that if anyone is going to win, it's going to be this one over the outside horse in the 7.
Yeah, and plus with the workout tab that this horse is bringing in from Delaware, and even that really good workout on the 24th of November at Tampa, it just, to me, I thought this horse might want one turn, and the 7 furlongs looked like it was going to hit this horse right in the, you know, between its eyes.
For me and Andrew, it is the outside horse, the number 7, Miss Liana. Let us see if we can get this consensus pick home in the 7th, this optional 16N1X, right now.
Races on. Good start for Pink Shoelaces, who shoots out to the early lead. Miss Liana from the outside matching strides with that one, and those two quickly speed away by 2.5 lengths to congrats Rosie in yellow colors, who's up to third. Right to that one's outside. Then comes Flowers for Chantel. Now moving up on the extreme outside. Here's, you know, I Be Lion, who's coming all the way up to challenge as they cross over onto the main track. It is Pink Shoelaces the leader, but only by a half a length. Miss Liana in second. On the outside, you know, I Be Lion is third. Congrats, Rosie Fanfan. They're together fourth and fifth as the top five bunch up, only separated by three. It's two more lengths and back to Mastering Bila and Flowers for Chantel. Those two are at the back. 23 seconds for the opening quarter mile. They take their run to the far turn. Pink Shoelaces, Miss Liana. Those two continue at it. Miss Liana up on the outside to put a nose in front. Fanfan battles on down toward the inside. It's two lengths then. Back to Congrats Rosie, who's up into the fourth spot. Another four then back to Mastering Bila down toward the inside. Flowers for Chantel. You Know I Be Lying, who was up close early on, has faded all the way back to last. They come by the quarter pole. Miss Liana up on the outside of Pink Shoelaces. Fanfan swings wide for the drive, and these three line up across the top of the stretch. On the outside, Fanfan with the momentum comes up to put a nose in front. Miss Liana battles on. Down toward the inside, Pink Shoelaces. These three continue past the eighth pole. They're four lengths clear of Congrats Rosie. Pink Shoelaces dead game down toward the inside. Fanfan on the outside is second, back to third. Miss Liana, Pink Shoelaces turned away all comers. Pink Shoelaces a length and a half.
And the number four, Pink Shoelaces, upsets the apple cart here at a solid price of 9-2. 53 is the winning buyer. 11.80 the winning mutual. Another great jockey, Daniel Centeno, one that we didn't really talk about earlier, but this one also dropping in class, and I think it just goes to show, you know, when you're looking for a horse, you know, and also the way the betting ended up, it kind of, you had all these horses that were just kind of, you know, 9-2, 2-1, really none of the long shots. A lot of these horses kind of just ended up kind of bumped together, except for this one, and this outlier ends up winning. Dropping class, bullet work, nothing else really to see here.
Yeah, and especially with the early speed form that it had up until that last race at Parks, which, you know, just didn't, that horse just didn't fire that day, and didn't really run its race. It could have just been the park surface or, you know, whatever. But, you know, going, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 back, this horse is breaking on top almost every time and running, you know, first quarters in, you know, sub 22 and a half seconds. You know, this horse showed early speed, and you know it worked out for him or for her today.
I also, for someone like you who watches Parks a lot of time, and you know sometimes, you know, we see these winter, you know, shots and the track is all chopped up. I mean, for you, what kind of track is Parks? Is it more of the tiring surface? Is it more of like that Oaklawn or that Saratoga training track where you're going to get that good stamina build off of it? Because I do agree with you, this one just seemed to not like the surface at all last time out.
It's a difficult surface to adapt to, is how I would look at it. It you know, some days it's, if you're in front, you're just going to get carried home, and some days you're going to be tired as hell on the front end. It's not the best of surfaces. They really could use a little bit of a redo, a buffer to it, you know, but it's not a bad surface. It's not a great surface. It's just one of those, you know, Midwest, you know, gritty surfaces where you got to, you know, kind of capulates or not capulates, envisions what the area is. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, you got to be gritty. You got to dig in to win those races.
Let's move on to the last race of this podcast. Race number 10 from Tampa Bay Downs. It is a 16,000, not more is it two life, 1 1/16 miles on a turf course. If it's Tampa Bay Downs, I had to throw a turf race in there. What did you like in this race, Andrew?
My top pick was the two, Jamma Dillon, for Douglas Nunn and Jose Bautista. I thought this horse was really running good races down at Monmouth. Gets the whip back, you know, gets a little bit of a, not class relief, but it is a drop from the last time out. But this horse was still running just as similar races at this level. I thought, you know, the way the turf was playing earlier in the week, that you could close a little bit better than it would be on the dirt. And, you know, just the races, the last three out of four races, this horse is really running good races. And I thought that maybe today was as good, was good, going to be this gelding's, you know, time to win.
For me, I also like Jamma Dillon a little bit. It wasn't my top pick. I think the stretch out was the main question mark. And this is something that I think a lot of beginner players do. They just see a horse stretching out and they don't really know, you know, what to expect. And sometimes in races where you see a lot of horses who have lost, you know, if a lot of horses have lost long on the turf and you see a horse stretching out for the first time, that's like the quote unquote imposter, or, you know, new horse, fresh face the field. And sometimes a lot of times they'll sneak up and they'll win 5-6-1, and they can really add the juicy mutuals. Jama Dillon was definitely one for my ticket. The number 7 Fighting Heart for me. I like the fact that this one, for me, you know, you always hear about certain angles for players who just, that's what they like to do. For me, it's seeing fast fractions like I did. Obviously, was still 5 off of that early front-running horse, but I pretty much held on for the most part, and also didn't hit the board. I think a lot of times people see, when they don't see a 1, 2, or 3, they just kind of discard the horse. For me, it's a lot more about lengths lost by. This one lost by less than 2 lengths, even though it finished 4th. I thought this one at a short price was improving, had run a 71 in the past going long. This one to me just kind of fit the ideal spot for me.
Yeah, I wanted to fade this favorite today or that day. I didn't really like how the last 2 races this horse kind of was just awkward when it was running.
Sure.
But I do see what you're saying, how the horse did try to keep on in that last race, and you know, maybe something happened in that race where with the stamina or something like that that led to a layoff. But the workouts were good. The workouts were consistently timed since then, at least like the last, you know, they did it 1 a week for the last 2 weeks leading into that. But yeah, I could see that. I didn't like it though. I didn't play it and I faded it, but I could see your points.
It's always good when you have kind of that contradictory idea, even for this show. It kind of allows people to, you know, learn. So don't feel bad if you didn't like this horse or playing against. For me in this race, it was the number 7, Fighting Heart. It's an inside stretch out in Jama Dillon for Andrew. Let's see who can get this nightcap at Tampa Bay Downs right now.
This is on. Bit of a tight squeeze there for Jama Dillon at the start. Husband and Lot out toward the inside came away with good early speed. Big Polo in the blue colors moving up now to challenge, and Big Polo going to take over onto the main track. Whiskey Plank up from the extreme outside is forwardly placed as well as they bend into the stretch for the first time around. Husband and Lot puts a nose into that third spot, is down toward the inside. Jama Dillon in tight in fourth. Then we come back to Bodhi Cody, who's in and amongst horses, and on the far outside comes Fighting Heart. The top 5 pulled 3.5 lengths ahead of Rainer, who's back in that 6th position. A length and a half more than back to Jama Dillon, who's now 7th. Then we come back to Cousin 8th. Gold Czar moves up outside of Hold the Spice, and Van is the trainer. They've just over 5/8 of a mile left to run in their journey, and Big Polo leads them up front. Big Polo 3/4 of a length to Whiskey Plank in the 2nd spot. Fighting Heart up on the outside starts to advance outside of Husband-in-Law. Just in between them is Bodhi Cody, the top 5, still separated by 4 lengths from the rest of the pack. Back in the 6th spot is Rainer. Jama Dillon starts to move up outside of that one. Then we come back to Hold the Spice, who moves up outside of Cuz. And it's a long last now to Van, who's still the trailer. 46-1, so they're moving right along up front. On the front end, Big Polo into the far turn. Pressure from Whiskey Plank. Just in behind that one, Fighting Heart pushed along. Husband-in-Law stays down toward the inside from 4th, is 2.5 behind. Jama Dillon starts to warm up to the task. Hold the Spice is also starting to rally in. Van tries to launch a bid from the back as they turn to the top of the stretch, and Whiskey Plank now goes to the front. Paddling on, Big Polo toward the inside. Husband-in-Law going to dive down toward the rail, trying to run on Fighting Heart down the center of the track. Jama Dillon, room for Rainer, who's coming through, and Hold the Spice is really starting to level out up on the outside. Here's Hold the Spice, who now comes up alongside of Rainer. These are the 2 that go on. Hold the Spice, and Rainer, Hold the Spice with all the momentum. Hold the Spice to win it.
And Hold the Spice gets it done. 69 buyer, $13 the winning mutual. Another nice, solid price. Big field, too, in this finale as well. Getting that $13 winner, a little bit over 5-1. Favorite way off the board. Nice fade by you, Andrew. And Jama Dillon, again, 8-1, and you're taking a shot with a horse stretching out for the first time. I thought ran really credible in this race.
Yeah, the fact that this horse even drifted up from 7-2 to 8-1 was the gift in its own. Mm-hmm. You got to play that if you're on that horse and you like the odds, 8-1. That's an overlay from me. The winner, this Canterbury and this Indiana Grand form right now, at least opening week, especially on the turf, is just running lights out right now at Tampa. This horse was, you know, closing from the back of the pack at Canterbury, just missing, running out of length, gets the mile on a 16th today and gets up in time. The odds showed it too. The 10-1 mooring line dropping down to a 9-2 horse, 5-1 horse. You know, odds cut in half. That just shows that this horse was live. And I really, you know, when it was coming down to the betting on Saturday, I really should have noticed that. But I ended up just sticking with the 2 and playing like a win place. And, you know, didn't finish in the top two, but I'll take a bang up third, you know, just on a handicapping perspective. So, you know, it wasn't the best, but at least it hit the board.
And I think that a lot of people, like, you know, they'll lose and they'll be so results oriented. And, you know, something that we always talk about, you know, or have heard from, you know, the cheese man, Gorgonzola. And he always says, you know, I'd rather see someone pick a 20-1 shot that runs third than a 2-5 shot that everyone else is on to win the race. Because at least then you're being contrarian, you're being different. And, you know, I do agree. And it's these type of horses, you know, at that price of 8-1, you don't have to get it done 5 out of 10 times. You have to get it done 2 out of 10 times, which, you know, that's still 8 losses. And I think that's the main key coming out with these types of horses. People don't want to lose 8 races. They want to just play the favorite and just keep going to the window. A lot of times you see a lot of the professional players, et cetera, you know, they're only going to the window once or twice to collect, but they're collecting because their horse, you know, paid 15-20-1, whether it's through exactas or just through smaller pick threes, doubles, or hitting a big pick six.
Yeah, I agree. Like if you were playing my top pick in every race over the first 3 days, we had winners, but you probably wouldn't be on top. But if you boxed my three horses for an exacta, we had, you know, 25-1 odds here, 55-1 odds here, 60-1 odds here. Like if you just did that, you'd probably be up on the week. Mm-hmm. So some people, you know, they see, oh, who did your top pick win? No, it didn't. Well, then, you know, you're not doing a good job. But yeah, if you're really looking at it, like you got to look at all aspects of these people's picks. And, you know, if they have a 20-1 shot in their top three, maybe you just play that horse because, you know, if they like it at 20-1 and you trust their opinion, then even if it's not their top pick, it's worth the play.
It's always back to the old school. I always use Naira as the perspective. You know, Dave Litvin was that solid 35-33%. You know, he played a lot more chalk. You know, Beer, who is the guy now for it, just wants, you know, if he hits 1-5, 20-25%, 1-4. But a lot of his horses, you know, are 8-6, 10-1 on top. So it's always, you know, listen, when we talk about, you know, following people's picks, you know, follow who you like, follow who you think is going to be a winner, or at least teach you something new. And that's the way I've always looked at, you know, following people's picks, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And as me and you both know, as people that give out picks, whether it's for sports or for horses or for whatever, you know, you're going to get that flack and whatnot from, you know, the haters or the trolls, you know, people that have nothing better to do. But, you know, you're going to, if you give out winners, you know, at the end of the day, the main public wants just winners. But if you can give them out winners at prices, then that's what sticks or keeps them to stick around.
That is all the time we have for today's podcast. I want to thank my special guest, Andrew Wozinski, for coming on. You guys can check out all of his In the Money Parks plays Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, of course. Anytime, man.
I want to thank all of the wonderful listeners for this podcast and all the other shows in the In the Money Media Network and my special guest, Andrew Wozinski. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Florentel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl, and we will see you next time.